We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our creator, not our government. I believe that scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the morning.
Attorney General of the United States, my overriding objective will be to return the Department of Justice to its core mission of keeping Americans safe and vigorously prosecuting criminals.
That was Pam Bondi yesterday in her initial confirmation hearing. Good morning. Good morning. It is Thursday, January 16th, and President-elect Donald Trump's Attorney General nominee Pam Bondi on Wednesday said that she wants to, quote, get back to basics of using the Department of Justice to go after hardened criminals, drug trafficking, and terrorists. This coming from the Washington Times this morning. Ms. Bondi said during her confirmation hearing with the Senate Judiciary Committee that the Justice Department would target gangs and cartels as well as crimes at the border and those carried out by foreign adversaries. She said in her opening statement, quote, that is what the American people expect and that is what they deserve from the Department of Justice. And the Democrats, of course, were trying to trip her up on a lot of things and asking in particular about a fair system of justice and whether she is going to target political opponents, which I found very rich considering the last 4 years of the Merrick Garland Department of Justice. Now, suddenly, the Democrats want total fairness and one tier. And, you know, you're not going to look into us at all, right? And in fact, Senator Adam Schiff, remember the guy who President Trump named Pencil Neck, you know, goes by Pencil Neck Schiff. He actually was wanting to know whether or not Pam Bondi would look into or investigate Special Counsel Jack Smith, who, of course, resigned. This was the exchange. And it was so fascinating to me watching this that Adam Schiff was so focused on whether or not Pam Bondi would investigate Jack Smith. You almost have to wonder if that itself kind of triggers a curiosity to investigate Jack Smith. But listen to this. This is cut 8.
The president has said Jack Smith should go to jail. Will you investigate Jack Smith?
Senator, I haven't seen the file. I haven't seen the investigation. I haven't looked at anything. It would be irresponsible of me to make a commitment regarding anything without you're a long practicing attorney, without looking at a file.
So you would need a factual
period.
You would need a factual predicate to open an investigation of Jack Smith, is that
not
right?
Not a summary by you sitting here, yes, sir.
And not a summary by the president either, right?
Absolutely.
So a summary by the president or his desire to investigate Jack Smith would not be enough for you to open an investigation of Jack Smith, is that right?
I will look at the facts and evidence in any case. You know,
and
72%,
sitting here today.
Senator, 72% of Americans
please, I only have 7 minutes.
Lost faith
sitting
in
here,
the Department of Justice.
Sitting here today, are you aware of any factual predicate to investigate Jack Smith? Sitting here today, yes or no?
Senator, I will look at the facts and the circumstances.
You can't
of
answer
anything
that question.
Brought to me.
You're not a part of the department yet. There's no worry about divulging law enforcement sensitive information. So just tell us. Are you aware of a factual predicate to investigate Jack Smith? Yes or no?
Senator, what I'm hearing on the news
are
is
you
horrible.
Aware of a
do I know
you,
if he
you
committed
seem
a
reluctant.
Crime? I have not looked
You seem
at.
Reluctant to answer a simple question.
So this goes back and forth, and it's just utterly absurd. And of course, he's wanting to pin her down and saying, you know, no, I haven't read the file, but then using that against her later if there is an investigation. And this is the way that all of these go. It also struck me listening to this clip again for like the fifth time. I only have 7 minutes. Well, this isn't about you, Senator Schiff. This is actually about Pam Bondi and the American people. And obviously the committee should want to hear her responses, not to hear you bloviate. But there was, you know, of course, more of this. And Senator Whitehouse, in particular, wanted to pin down Pam Bondi on a fair system of justice. Listen to this, cut nine.
You have said that Department of Justice prosecutors will be prosecuted in the Trump administration. What Department of Justice prosecutors will be prosecuted and why?
I said that on TV. I said prosecutors will be prosecuted, to finish the quote, if bad. Investigators will be investigated. You know, we all take an oath, Senator, to uphold the law. None of us are above the law. Let me give you a really good example of a bad lawyer within the Justice Department, a guy named Klein Smith, who altered a FISA warrant, one of the most important things we can do in this country. So will everyone be held to an equal, fair system of justice if I am the next attorney general? Absolutely. And no one is above the law.
Boom. She killed it. Well, let's welcome in Will Chamberlain, who's senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. Will, your thoughts on Pam Bondi's performance? Because, you know, as we know, this is kind of just made for TV exchange. This is all about just these clips and talking points and all of that. It's not really about advice and consent, because it's just Democrats trying to trip her up. But for what it's worth in 2025 now, what did you make of it?
I thought she did outstanding. They just didn't lay a glove on her. And she just, you know, she had the knowledge and understanding of, like, what questions does she have to answer and what questions can she just simply outright disregard as inappropriate. And a good chunk of the Democrats' questions are hypotheticals, you know, things that would bear on how she might handle a particular case if she were in the DOJ. And she can just flat out refuse to answer those questions. And she did. And it's a stark contrast with how Jeff Sessions handled his confirmation hearing 8 years ago, where Sessions, for honestly no good reason at all, agreed to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. And that commitment was made in his confirmation hearing. And that commitment ultimately was a big reason why the first Trump administration had so many issues and was hamstrung by the Mueller investigation. I mean, if Jeff Sessions was doing his job and actually able to review that BS filing, and, you know, put a stop to that investigation, I think a lot of things would have been better in that first term. So, you know, Pam Bondi, I think, has learned the lesson. She probably knew it already. She didn't need to learn the lesson. She knew what she had to do, and she knew what she didn't have to do, and she didn't have to give any of these Democratic senators an inch, and she didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, she even said that directly to Senator Blumenthal when he went back and was talking to her about her response to Senator Durbin, wanting her basically to concede his version of the language of saying that Joe Biden won in 2020 and sort of pinning her into this whole, you know, loyalty narrative and whatever. And she answered Dick Durbin really well. And I want to play that first to lay the context to her response to Blumenthal, because she absolutely didn't have to say exactly what they wanted her to say. So first, this is the exchange with Durbin. It's cut 10.
At issue, I believe, in this nomination hearing is not your competence nor your experience. At issue is your ability to say no. More than any other cabinet official, the Attorney General has to be prepared to put the Constitution first and even tell the President of the United States you're wrong. The political danger and personal costs of such a decision are well documented. You have only to ask former Attorney General Jeff Sessions and Bill Barr, whom Donald Trump sacked for lack of loyalty. And so I have three basic questions I'd like to ask you. Most Americans believe that central to the peaceful transition of power in a democracy is the acceptance of the results of an election. To my knowledge, Donald Trump has never acknowledged the legal results of the 2020 election. Are you prepared to say today under oath without reservation that Donald Trump lost the presidential contest to Joe Biden in 2020?
Ranking Member Durbin, President Biden is the President of the United States. He was duly sworn in, and he is the President of the United States. There was a peaceful transition of power. President Trump left office and was overwhelmingly elected in 2024.
So obviously that was the best response that she could have possibly given under the circumstances. And respectfully to Senator Durbin, I mean, central to the peaceful transition of power in a constitutional republic is not just or merely the acceptance of election results. It's confidence in the accuracy of election results through a free and fair process. I mean, in other words, election integrity, right? But then Senator Blumenthal, and then I want to get your reaction to this, Will Chamberlain, after this clip. Senator Blumenthal follows up and is like, you know, no, you got to say this in exactly a certain way that we want you to say it. And Bondi's response is just fire. This is Cut 7.
I have to say also, really troubled, deeply disturbed by some of your responses and non-responses to the question that you've been asked today. You have to be able to say that Donald Trump lost the 2020 election. You dodged that question when you were asked directly by Senator Durbin. You have to be able to say that January 6th insurrectionists who committed violence shouldn't be pardoned.
You said that I have to sit up here and say these things. No, I don't. I sit up here and speak the truth. I'm not going to sit up here and say anything that I need to say to get confirmed by this body. I don't have to say anything. I will answer the questions to the best of my ability.
That was amazing. Your thoughts, Will?
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically, that should be clipped and made. Every nominee should just watch that and, like, memorize that line. That's correct. You don't have to say anything. Right. Like, and that's true. It doesn't matter what the, you know, what question is being asked of you at a confirmation hearing. You don't have to say anything. We don't need a single Democrat vote ever for any of these confirmations. Thank you, Harry Reid. Right. Harry Reid changed the rules and made it so the Democrat, you can't filibuster cabinet appointments. So there's no reason that, you know, basically. And what I love about it is just it's a refusal to accept the framing. Right. Like they're trying to pin her down and put her in conflict with the president. It's like, well, the president doesn't think that he really, truly and legitimately and fairly lost the 2020 election. Okay. Like, it's, you know, he has reasons for thinking that. Like, it's not out of the completely, you know, it's not totally unreasonable for him to think that. So the point is that she doesn't have to contradict him. There's no reason to. And the fact that Democrats are still obsessed with this, I think it points to a broader issue, which is, Democrats are out of ideas. Like, we've been having this discussion about 2020 for 4 years now. And guess what? Trump won the presidency while still rejecting whether or not the results of the 2020 election. So really, it turns out the people don't really care about this. And perhaps it's time to move on from an election that really did have a huge amount of election integrity problems, as you know, which is that, you know, I think it's not the fault of, you know, the people for the fact that election integrity is not obviously and clearly transparent, that it is not obvious that there's no possible way for the vote count to be different than it was. The same people talk about the importance of, you know, the peaceful transition of power, and in the same breath think that voter ID is appalling. Like, how your position is absurd. If you actually think election integrity matter, if you actually think that the peaceful transition of power matters, then it should be obvious, then you should make it have, you want as much integrity as possible in the election process.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right, Will, on all of those points that, you know, Bondi's response of, no, I don't have to say anything. I mean, she made it very clear that she was not there to simply concede all of her own opinions and beliefs and the way that she would run the Justice Department as the nominee in order to win their vote, which she's not going to win anyway. I mean, let's be clear. I mean, there's no way that Dick Durbin and Senator Blumenthal are coming into this with an open mind anyway. So why would she concede? And you're absolutely right to contrast her responses to the concessions that Jeff Sessions made that ultimately ended his tenure as attorney general. And so I think she did absolutely learn from that bad example. But this was also taking a page from a lot of the Supreme Court nominees that really started with Ruth Bader Ginsburg by saying, you know, I'm not going to comment on how I may ultimately hold or vote or think about a future case that's not even in front of me yet. And she and Pam Bondi made that very clear along those same lines. I'm not going to make any promises about a specific fact pattern or a specific pending matter or question. I'm just going to talk about the integrity of the Justice Department as a whole. And that's a really key thing, because part of the Trump mandate, I think, is that voters want to see these institutions like the Department of Justice, the FBI, and certainly our elections having integrity, transparency, and accuracy restored. And it seems like the Democrats really don't actually want that. They just want these institutions to have the outcomes that they prefer.
Yeah, and they're trying to kind of pre-shield Jack Smith and everybody else who did all this lawfare against President Trump from investigation and prosecution. It's like, you know, you heard Adam Schiff trying to do that. Like, you, there's no predicate for investigating Jack Smith, right? You don't know of any predicate. It's like, well, I mean, I don't want to, we're not going to prejudge, and there are issues here, right? I mean, the guy did continue to act as the special counsel after a judge had found he wasn't properly appointed, wielding the power of the purse, doing all these things, you know, engaging in this lawfare, you know, like query whether or not there's, you know, there's an issue with he needs to return, for example, all his salary to, you know, the Treasury because he wasn't properly appointed. So, you know, what he didn't have no legitimate position. And so all those funds that were used need to be spent. That's just one idea that's right off the top of my head. There's, you know, there's a lot of ways to, you know, and there's no reason that Pam Bondi needs to say like anything about Jack Smith. It's like, sorry, I'm not going to comment on a specific case, period. Right. Like, yeah, I will comment on the general principle that says, yes, obviously there must be a factual predicate for me to open an investigation, and no, President Trump's desire alone for someone to be investigated will not be sufficient for me to open an investigation. Those two are simple, but I'm not going to comment on the specifics of any case. Sorry.
Yeah. And that's actually acting with integrity, with ethics, and showing that she isn't biased. I mean, that's exactly what you want from a prosecutor, because as you and I will know very well, there is a higher responsibility of a prosecutor using the government's resources to not act with any sort of malicious intent or bias or either way to say, well, you know, whether it's somebody that you approve of their politics or they're your opponent, or whether you approve of their religious beliefs, for example, or not. That's not how a prosecuting attorney should ever look at a matter or a situation that may ultimately end in an investigation, regardless of whether charges are eventually brought. And that type of conversation was nowhere in the Democrats' framing. They weren't talking about a standard of justice and fairness. They were wanting to ensure that Pam Bondi was not going to go after them when they've been going after Trump and Catholics and Christians and everybody else that they consider their political or religious opponents for the last 4 years. And that is rank hypocrisy. And I think that that just showed exactly why the American people rejected outright their entire platform and position in 2024.
Yeah, that and the total lack of substance about what, you know, what are they upset about, what Trump will do. I mean, it's a party, they're out of ideas. You know, they've been running on nearly 10 years of essentially democracy, Trump, you know, Trump is an authoritarian fascist. And it's like, well, that's kind of over now, because, you know, Trump's the president again, he's not going to run for a third term. So, you know, and you get the sense, I think somebody described it as, you know, if the first term led to the resistance, the second election is leading to the acquiescence, you know, the sort of like they're trying to, you know, put up a meager fight, but there's just you can tell there's no juice left. Like they don't have any other ideas.
Yeah, it's kind of how we felt during the conclusion of the Mueller investigation, where it was like you were just beating this horse that has been dead for a really, really long time. Like it's in the ground and you're still beating the dirt on top. I mean, it's so bad that this is all that they have. And the special counsel's report that did come out a couple days ago, I mean, it's not even making news because it really wasn't all that substantive, and basically conceded that there was no real factual predicate, to use Schiff's term, to call January 6th a quote-unquote insurrection. We know that the Democrats only did that because they wanted to invoke the 14th Amendment and try to say that Trump can't run again. And for all of those things, then they couldn't even show or prove that Trump actually incited something that they've wrongly been terming an insurrection. So last 30 seconds, your thought on that.
Yeah, I mean, the report couldn't do anything other than, confirm what had already been an indictment from Jack Smith months ago. Like, there was nothing new on it. It's amazing that they fought so hard to release it when they really were just saying the exact same things that they were in the indictment. The only really new thing he said was, I believe we could convict him at trial, which is obvious because you tried to prosecute him. So,
right. Like, you're not going to bring an indictment unless you think that, unless you're a really stupid prosecutor or you're just out for political persecution. So, you know, maybe there's that. But Will Chamberlain, always appreciate your thoughts. We're already out of time. I could talk to you about this for a lot longer. Follow Will Chamberlain, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. We'll be right back with more. This Sanctity of Life Month, we honor the over 66 million babies whose lives have been tragically ended through abortion since Roe versus Wade. Sadly, with the abortion pill accounting for over 60% of all abortions, babies' lives are at even greater risk now. But in the midst of this darkness, there is a light that shines, and that's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics have rescued over 300,000 babies from abortion and have prayed with over 80,000 women to come to Christ.
When I heard her heartbeat, I decided to keep her. And now my daughter's about to be three. I don't know where my life would be without her.
An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. This is Jenna Ellis asking you to join Preborn in protecting life. One ultrasound session costs $28, and $140 will sponsor five ultrasounds. Any gift will help, $100, $200, even $1,000. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And of course, pro-life and opposition to abortion remains a key focus that conservatives and Christians, of course, should continue to press the Trump administration on and all of his nominees. And I've said for a while that Donald Trump should get his pick of nominees. And we talked to Noel Fritch yesterday about some concerns with whether or not some of these nominees are actually Trump's choice. But, you know, regardless, he is the one who's making those ultimate decisions. And yet we can, and through our representatives and, of course, senators in Congress, ask questions of nominees to secure some assurances, would be a good way to put it. And I think that that's kind of the appropriate move for someone like an RFK Jr. Now, a lot of you know that I'm a huge fan of the whole MAHA movement, what RFK would like to do with HHS in terms of some of the FDA kind of things and the food consumption and just getting America healthy again as a whole. That's a really good objective. However, there are concerns, and there were even when he was still running on the independent presidential ticket, about his views on abortion. And former Vice President Mike Pence, through his organization Advancing American Freedom, spoke to the Daily Wire, gave them an exclusive yesterday, saying that Mike Pence, his organization, urges senators to oppose RFK Jr.'s confirmation. We strongly encourage you to reject the nomination of any pro-abortion nominees to serve at HHS. So this coming from the Daily Wire, Advancing American Freedom, who's Mike Pence's organization, is urging senators to vote against confirming Robert F. Kennedy Jr. over his stance on abortion. In a letter first obtained by the Daily Wire, Advancing American Freedom lays out five detailed questions for Donald Trump's nominee to serve as the Secretary of Health and Human Services, or the HHS. It points out that Kennedy formerly said that a woman should have the, quote, right to abort her unborn baby, and the government shouldn't be involved, quote, even if the baby is full term, unquote. Such a position wrote AAF President Tim Chapman and the chairman of the board, Mark Short, is, quote, completely out of step with the strong pro-life record of the first Trump administration. So I agree with that position completely. It is out of step with the first administration of Donald Trump. When I worked for him, I was very proud to support the fact that he was the first president to go to the March for Life. He continued to stand up for not only religious liberty, but pro-life. I mean, all of these sacred rights that come from God, our creator, that the government is obligated to preserve and protect. And that is very, very important to ensure that Trump and all of his nominees carry through to the second term. I mean, we've seen the overturning of Roe versus Wade through the Dobbs decision. And then, unfortunately, the RNC backing off on not only life, but also traditional marriage and the sanctity of marriage. And a couple of these things that are foundational to a moral and upright society and human flourishing. So where I disagree with Pence's organization in terms of their posture is that I don't think it actually helps to oppose RFK over this. Because I think even though he is probably one of the most contentious nominees, and it's going to be very interesting when they actually schedule his confirmation hearing, kind of how that all is framed. And I think they haven't scheduled it yet because they're still looking at the whip count, all of that. Some GOP senators are probably rightfully concerned that, you know, 5 minutes ago he was a Democrat and what exactly he'll do at the HHS. But I think that that raising attention to this issue is incredibly important because the GOP senators have an opportunity in his confirmation hearing, not to be contentious, not to be the, you know, the Adam Schiffs and the Dick Durbins and the Senator Blumenthals. They have an opportunity to directly ask for assurances that the HHS will have rules and policy that does filter down to the states. Often, I mean, there are some things that affect state policy to ensure that that will not be pro-abortion, but rather will be Donald Trump's commitment to pro-life, and that the head of HHS and all of the deputies, which may include Dr. Oz, of course, will not advance pro-abortion or even be remotely squidgy about it. Those are the types of assurances that are entirely appropriate for GOP senators to ask. So while I overall support RFK Jr. in this role, it's a valid concern for conservatives that absolutely has to be addressed. Now, HHS puts out a lot of rules and mandates that affect state policy. So Kennedy has to reassure Republicans, if he wants their vote for confirmation, that his deputies will support pro-life positions. So let's welcome in now John Shelton, who is the policy director at Advancing American Freedom. So, John, I think it's very appropriate for former Vice President Mike Pence, who has been consistently pro-life for his entire public life. I mean, even including when he was a radio host right back in Indiana. I think it's valid for him to raise this concern.
Yeah, I mean, if he doesn't and the Senate doesn't, then it's not going to be raised at all. And so, I mean, some of the things I've heard unofficially that senators have reported back, that, you know, conversations from RFK, those things have been reassuring, but those are just kind of private conversations. They're not binding in any way. So, even if, you know, I think we have a bit of a strategic disagreement, on moving forward on this, but if you want to move forward with RFK, you know, why not ask for commitments under oath? Why not all those things that are fairly reassuring that he's been saying about deputies and about how he's going to govern at HHS? Why not get that on the record so that can be pointed to in any kind of future disagreements that might come up?
Yeah, and this is where I think in his confirmation hearings, it's absolutely appropriate to ask for those reassurances under oath. And this isn't something, you know, like we were talking about in the first segment of, you know, a Pam Bondi sort of, you know, Department of Justice situation where you shouldn't comment ethically on potential hypothetical future cases. I mean, this is something about how he's going to administer his role at the HHS, which includes policy. So it's entirely appropriate to ask policy-driven questions. So what type of assurances would Advancing American Freedom like to see at a confirmation hearing from RFK Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, I think Republican HHS secretaries in the past have expressed their support for life. And, you know, I think I've told you this before, but my grandfather was actually an HHS secretary under Reagan. He was there under his first administration. And one of the things that he would say is that the unborn have the same rights as pregnant women. You know, some of these assurances are very helpful. These ways of talking about it, I think, are helpful. So figuring out where RFK is now, given that he's said a whole host of things ranging from, you know, some kind of limits on abortion after viability, all the way up to, you know, abortion on demand up until birth. So, you know, there's that. There's rolling back the Obama and Biden kind of removal of safeguards on the abortion pill. So, I mean, we have a disagreement with, I think, the president about where the pro-life people should be pushing right now. You know, we kind of believe in the sanctity of life beginning at conception. And, there, you know, there's others who think that's not politically feasible. So, I mean, but even recognizing that and recognizing what the president has said about this is a state's issue now, one of the most important things that senators could be getting commitments on is the abortion bill regs, because, you know, even under Bill Clinton, even under a Democratic president, there used to be regulations, safeguards in place to protect women and, you know, and to make this process as safe as possible, to ensure that they were seen by a, you know, a qualified health practitioner, that these, you know, pills weren't just mailed, you know, through USPS to people who never got a checkup appointment, because people occasionally die from the abortion pill. So that's, I mean, that's a big thing. If you want to make the state, this is a state's issue argument, which I don't agree with, but I respect, you at least need to protect the state's abilities to enforce their laws. And if you just allow, you know, abortion companies to mail in across state lines abortion pills that are in violation of their laws, you can't credibly kind of bolster this state's issue push. And so I think that's a huge issue. There's also, you know, this is something I think RFK has been really interested in. We no longer collect adverse event reporting related to the abortion pill, so unless someone dies. And so if you know, you get hospitalized and you're on your deathbed but you recover, there's no report that ever goes out to anybody that the abortion pill hurt you in any kind of way whatsoever. And yet for years now, we've been removing more and more safeguards on the abortion pill, even though we don't have any of the data that would, you know, corroborate that this is safe to do. And so from what I've heard from conversations with senators like James Lankford, you know, RFK really is interested in this kind of transparency and reporting aspect. And so it's something I think would be a pretty easy thing to get commitments from him on. There's other things like Title X funding. So, you know, I see some comments from time to time of how much of a role in abortion does HHS really have? Well, whenever we talk about Planned Parenthood and funding for Planned Parenthood, that comes from HHS. That's the Title X fund. There's Medicaid reimbursements. There's other issues. And you know, HHS is, if you're going to be concerned about these things, HHS is the place to be concerned. There's implications at other agencies, DOJ, DOL, and other places, but the big kahuna is HHS. So,
yeah, and I think you're absolutely right to frame it that way, as the big kahuna, as you call it. John Shelton, who's the policy director at Advancing American Freedom, because I think a lot of people, when they think about the topic of pro-life and abortion, they think very much legislatively, and they think the legislative branch. And now, you know, the argument, of course, is that Dobbs returned this just to the states. They kind of miss that Dobbs actually articulated this topic has been returned to the people and their elected representatives, which of course includes Congress. And so they think of it purely legislatively, but there is such a huge impact to this overall issue in all of these various segments that you're addressing that HHS has a huge part of. And whoever is at the top in HHS, and this is a huge reason why we were very grateful for the first Trump administration being staunchly pro-life, that had a lot of effects on pro-life overall. And I think that the average person doesn't really recognize how big of a role HHS plays when it comes to advocating for pro-life.
Yeah, I mean, people might not realize it, and, you know, maybe that's a good thing because it means they don't have to come into to contact with this bureaucracy that often makes life more difficult than not. But HHS...
Isn't that the entire federal government? But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And this is like the biggest, you know, department. You know, it's a massive, massive enterprise. So you need somebody at the top who's going to be really passionate about this. And because there's just hundreds of decisions made every single day about that pertain to life and protecting it. You know, it's not just Title X funding. It's not just the abortion bill, as important as those are. There's things like protecting doctors from being discriminated against because they don't want to perform abortions. There's like all kinds of issues like that. And so you need not just deputies, but you need rank and file employees at HHS who are going to be committed to this cause.
Yeah, and you know, and we do know that at least there will be hopefully a couple of good appointees within the HHS that are pro-life, but overall, do we know yet at least who would run personnel if at the top, you know, we get these concessions from RFK Jr. and he says, you know, okay, well, that's not really, you know, my thing. I'm going to kind of staff that out. I mean, if something like that, which is kind of a dodge, you know, at his confirmation hearings, I could see him saying something like that. Like, well, you know, that's not really why I'm there. I'm focused on all of these other MAHA kinds of things. Who is going to be staffing HHS? And also, isn't this why we need to also push as Christians for more Christian conservative deputies throughout the executive branch?
Yeah, I mean, at one point it was floated around that that Roger Severino, who's at the Heritage Foundation, would be there as a deputy to make sure that things are going great. And Roger, you know, I could think of no greater assurance that, you know, if we're going to proceed with RFK, to have someone like Roger there. He was at the Office of Civil Rights at HHS, so he knows this. You know, he's one of the smartest, brightest people in the pro-life movement. But he got shut down because of his connections to Project 2025. And so that was a huge, huge disappointing moment in my mind. And maybe they'll find another place or role for him there. But you need people like Roger Severino. Now, they did nominate Dave Weldon, who's, you know, a champion for life and kind of bioethical issues in general. And so he'd be at CDC. It'd be great to have somebody really, we've already got names for the FDA, and there's some reasons for optimism there. But I would love to see more people like Roger Severino and Dave Weldon, and I think a lot of the concerns would dissipate if that were the case. It would go back to more kind of fundamental: is this person the best pick for Republicans, rather than what does RFK actually believe about abortion?
Right. Yeah. And I was actually thinking about Roger Severino and, you know, and you're right, John Shelton, that when he was at least being announced as, you know, a deputy, and now that's kind of been rolled back, unfortunately, people like that absolutely need to be in these positions of power and administration in the HHS. And so I'm very grateful to Advancing American Freedom and to former Vice President Pence for raising this issue, because, you know, regardless of what, you know, you think of Pence, and there's a ton of social media stuff, you know, talking about things that are totally irrelevant. On this point, he's right. And we should all be talking about the merit of that argument and asking our GOP senators, particularly in that committee, if they are going to get assurances on pro-life issues for RFK's confirmation hearing. That's the action item. Thanks so much, John Shelton. You can follow him on social media as well as AAF. We'll be right back with more.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And in addition to calling your GOP senators and even call your Democrat senators, ask them to promote life as well, but to gain those assurances from all nominees, but especially RFK Jr. in Health and Human Services, you can stand up for life by participating in the Preborn 2025 AFR campaign. And this is our partnership with Preborn Ministry, which is the direct competition to the abortion industry. I love the way that they frame that. And it is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the United States. By letting a woman see her baby on ultrasound and hear the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life is doubled. And so while we need to continue to work legislatively in the executive branch on all of those things to make abortion illegal and all of these across state lines, mailing of these terrible drugs that have harmful consequences, all of these ways that we fight in civil society and in the government, we also need to be fighting on an individual level by showing women that it's not just about making abortion illegal, it's about making it unthinkable. Because we wouldn't even need it to be illegal because it's already unlawful. It's against the morality of the truth of God. But if no women made that choice, then it wouldn't even matter whether it was legal or not. And so this is a way that you can have a major impact. And so your gift of $28 provides one woman who's seeking an abortion a free ultrasound, giving the mom an opportunity to choose life for her baby. So we are trying to sponsor as many ultrasounds as possible during this week. And you can call 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or you can donate online, afr.net. So let's welcome in now Dan Steiner, who is the president of Preborn Ministries. And Dan, thank you so much for the work that you do, the dedication to defending life and giving women an opportunity to see their baby's heartbeat and choose life.
Hell, Jenna, it's our pleasure to do so, and we're thankful for the station there for American Family Radio, and especially for the American Family Radio audience who's following the Word of God, which says rescue those that are being taken away to death and those that are being taken to the slaughter. Hold them back. That's what we're doing together, because here's the deal. If a woman who God has put a motherly instinct in her heart sees her baby, the first baby picture inside her womb of her baby moving, it's something clicks. In fact, I've actually had an OBGYN tell me that there's an anatomical endocrine reaction in that mother. And that's what we're providing with these scans. And it most of the time will double the likelihood that she will choose life. So it's very effective. You know, we can legislate about it. We can talk about it. We can do these wonderful things. But the best thing we can do is to stop it by telling her see her baby, and then of course, the wonderful AFR listeners not only provide that $28 ultrasound, but then maternity clothes and cribs and car seats and doctor visits, everything for free because we care. And in the name of our wonderful chief executive officer, the King of Kings, Jesus Christ.
Amen. And what a wonderful ministry. And to explain that dedication to life. And, you know, often we hear from the leftists that criticism or that false attack saying, well, you're just pro-birth and then Christians don't care after the fact. That is absolutely false. And so many ministries and churches provide so many things that you just mentioned, you know, car seats, diapers, doctor's visits, all of those things to help mothers and families or even single mothers, whatever the situation is, ensure that her choice of life is provided for.
Yes. Yeah, the compassion's out there. It's just a matter of reaching the girl before the abortionist does. She's buying into the narrative of the culture and, you know, thinks that it's a simple procedure, doesn't realize that it's her baby inside of her. The ultrasound dispels all of that, and then the practical compassion to help her. She doesn't really want an abortion. Most of the time she's being pressured to have that abortion by, most of the time, the mother of the pregnant girl for the aborting the grandbaby incredulously, and then also the husband or boyfriend that's pushing her. But the resolve that steals in her heart, her willingness to stand against those winds of pressure when she sees her baby is what we're really doing with these ultrasounds. And, you know, $28 is less than, sadly, under Biden's economy, a meal out these days. You can save a life. $140 does five of them. And there may even be somebody in the audience, Jenna, who could underwrite a machine. You're probably aware that we've placed dozens and dozens of ultrasound machines in pregnancy centers last year, 145 of them actually, throughout the United States. They're about a $15,000 ticket. These pregnancy centers don't have the financial bandwidth to do that. And so many of the FR listeners have helped us with that too, for which we're very, very grateful.
That's so wonderful. And I'm speaking with Dan Steiner, who is the president at Preborn. And if you would like to participate in actively helping protect life, you can donate by calling 877-616-2396, 877-616-2396, or donate online, afr.net. And of course, you can also go to preborn.com. And, you know, that raises a question, of course, Dan, that, you know, we see so much money that is given and, you know, and raised by the political machinery. And we see, you know, just the billions of dollars that are spent even on losing campaigns. Where is the church overall on this issue of saying, you know, we want to help on something that is sustainable? I mean, elections are absolutely important. You know, donate to those. I'm not saying don't. But this is something that is so fundamental to exercising our Christian faith, which is to ensure that we are protecting as many lives as we can from the horrific atrocity of abortion.
Right. Yeah, it breaks my heart to see the wasted dollars in the political process. And, you know, even though Roe v. Wade was overturned in 2022, we have more abortions in 2023, more abortions in 2024. The political process, frankly, and the best thing we hope for, which was the overturning of Roe v. Wade, miserably failed in stopping abortions because of the abortion pill. And, you know, I wish that the church would rally behind that. I think we've got, in so many churches, therapeutically oriented, entertainment-driven congregations that are not willing to stand against the winds of godless culture, which we should. And the pinnacle of that, certainly, it's the slaughter of children, you know, as an offering to convenience in America. And I wish that I could say that the church was robustly behind that. And, you know, if you're listening, encourage your pastor. Support Preborn and support your local pregnancy clinic. Take a stand. God will bless them for it.
Amen. And, you know, something I really appreciate about my local church that I've been a member of for over a year now here in Florida since I moved is that they do take a, we do as a church, take a very strong stand for life and encourage that kind of activity directly from the Sunday morning pulpit and throughout the week and throughout, you know, all of the ministries that we're engaged in. And every church needs to take that stand on Sanctity of Human Life Sunday, for example, and not just on that day, but, you know, throughout the year, be speaking about these issues that are so critical to the Christian life and to sound doctrine. And so, again, people can support Preborn. You can go to afr.net or you can call 877-616-2396. And Dan Steiner, in just the last few minutes I have with you, you know, that person who's listening thinking, you know, okay, you know, should I make this donation, or, you know, they're kind of hesitating. what is your message to engage in this? Because, I mean, we know that God will bless this effort, but specifically preborn this week.
Well, that $28, all $28 of the $28 goes to the girl that's restricted donor designated income to preborn that we use to give to clinics across America. We've underwritten 58,000 scans last year, and we will send you a picture of a baby whose life was saved and a story of the mother, like the one that you helped underwrote, if you want to do that by going to preborn.com, AFR.net, 877-616-2396. Be part of God's solution here. Every single person's help matters because every single baby and girl matters.
Amen to that. And this is something that you can do positively. If you're looking at the news and thinking, does my voice matter? And, you know, is anybody on Capitol Hill paying attention? And, you know, all of these other things that can overwhelm us or seem just so difficult. This is a way today that you can actively engage in standing for life and standing for truth. So go to AFR.net today or call 877-616-2396. And as always, you can reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net. New episode of On Demand with Jenna Ellis, my AFR exclusive podcast, dropping tomorrow, all about Israel with Josh Hammer. You're not going to want to miss it.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.